Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And this is Phyllis Pricer, your hostess with the Higher Dimension. Welcome to our show this evening. And don't forget, it is a call-in show. You can reach the BBS radio to talk to us at area code 877-876-5227. Again, this is a Higher Dimension, and we are not having Philip Gardner. Unfortunately, there was an illness in his family, and we could not arrange for an interview with him. But we do have someone else whom I think you will find as fascinating, and that is Tony Kosinek, K-O-S-I-N-E-C. Mr. Kosinek is a Kabbalist. And that is to say, he is involved with the study and research of the Kabbalah, which is considered a science and has its roots going way back to ancient Babylon and possibly earlier. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. And it's called, it's really the hidden wisdom. And it is a way of cause and effect by determined rules, which we might call the laws of the universe, weaving into a single exalted goal described as the revelation of God or godliness to the creation. And it is these are rules that we will discuss and find out that it is not a part of religion as such, but at any rate, to explain it better is Tony. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you for having me, Phyllis.
Oh, you're quite welcome. We're delighted to have you, and we want to thank Diane Newton for bringing you to my attention and for letting us be facilitators for this particular show. Can you tell us a little bit about the Kabbalah and the interest that is rising at this point and why it is so important in our world?
Yeah.
Big order, I know.
Well, as you said in your sort of explanation of Kabbalah being a fixed set of rules or laws that weave together for a specific goal. They come from a certain source, which is the source of life, and they project all, this source projects all of these things that we experience here, all the laws that function, both what we perceive as outside of ourselves and inside of ourselves, and they only function for one purpose, and that is to bring all of creation to a complete fulfillment. And that's why it says that it is the revelation of his godliness to his creatures on earth. In other words, every creature, every person, every soul has but one real purpose in life, and that is to reveal what's now hidden from them. That is, that this source of life, but the actual reality that we live in, is concealed from us as a result of certain laws and rules that were set into motion. But the whole system is built only in order to reveal this godliness or this upper force or this reality to all of humanity. Where it started, why it's so important to people, and why there is a reaction now, such a heavy interest in it, is because it really is describing forces of nature and a force of development. What we are finding is that humanity as a whole, this incarnate generation, has come to a point of development where it is now going to flip the way in which the basis on which it has been developing into a completely different basis. And as a result of that, we will be able to begin to perceive and enter this sort of upper reality. So people are feeling a kind of a longing, an emptiness, but they don't really know what it's for. And Kabbalah is actually the method that it's a science that was, well, you know, it's a hidden science, but it was only hidden because it wasn't understood, because it wasn't needed. We've reached a point in the development of humanity where we realize that science is not really telling us the purpose of our lives. It can tell us something mechanical, but it can't give us purpose. And even science admits that it can't sort of penetrate human awareness. It can only sort of define its borders. We know that that most people are not receiving an answer in religion or in just belief and abstractions. Mm-hmm. There is a longing for something that they can't find here in this world. They cannot satisfy their desires here. They are going to have to find a whole other way to penetrate the thing that they are really seeking. And
okay.
And the reason that people are so interested in this is that Kabbalah itself is the methodology for allowing people to begin to perceive
mm-hmm.
the actual reality.
Mm-hmm. And what is the definition of this reality?
Well, this reality that we perceive, you know, it's interesting, your show is called Higher Dimensions, but but what exactly are higher dimensions? We live in a complete reality, in a complete holistic totality, but we have absolutely no sense of it here, because spirituality, what we call spirituality,
mm-hmm.
or those things that are hidden from our five senses, is actually in a complete opposite phase to the way that we function.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we function by a certain programming, we cannot perceive anything about it. This is the way in which you can call this upper force the creator, how the creator concealed the rest of reality, the larger part of reality from us.
Okay.
Because we received a programming that
mm-hmm.
is completely opposite to the nature of spirituality. And just as we know that through science and so on, that it's possible to investigate natural science and occurrences in the world and so on,
mm-hmm.
and talk to other people and experiment and confirm that such and such a thing is so, that there is an actual nature to it, there also is a nature to what is unseen to us that can be known, can be investigated, discovered, confirmed,
mm-hmm.
shared, actually entered. So the only way to sort of define what spirituality actually is, or what is hidden from us, is really first to look at how it's hidden from us.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the way that it's hidden from us is that we function according to a certain programming.
Mm-hmm.
All of our senses, our hearing, our seeing, our touch, and our taste.
Through the five senses.
Yes. All of those things don't tell us anything about what's actually outside of us at all. The entire reality that what we call reality and what we concur about with our friends
mm-hmm.
Is really a projection based on an inner programming that makes all of these five senses function the way that they do.
Mm-hmm. In other words, it's our reality as defined by our experiences and what we see.
Yes.
And I would call to mind Plato's example of the cave. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. Something like that. We see only that which we are conditioned to see.
Yes, we see only that which we are equal to.
Mm-hmm.
We can only perceive things according to whether or not we have within us that inner property
mm-hmm.
that is in what it is that we see. So if the programming of the five senses is based on one thing, and that is egoism. In other words,
yes.
Something will be what you could call a spiritual object, but we can't see it for what it is. We can only see it according to the programming that we have, which is, what am I going to get out of this? What does it mean to me? How can I get a piece of this? I want to receive this strictly for myself.
Uh-huh.
Every action that we do is robotic, and we do it for that reason. As a result of that, we can only see and feel and seem to be living in a world that is made up of that quality within us. So we project all our experiences, what we perceive as good or bad, is based strictly on our egoism.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that we would be able to perceive what is opposite to that, and I'll just tell you that the definition from what the Kabbalists tell us the definition of spirituality is pure, unconditional bestowal. It is the polar opposite of our inner qualities. So the only way that is possible to get any sense of spirituality at all, or the greater reality, is that we have to actually develop an additional sensor that allows us to begin to sense the difference between us and that loving quality of unconditional love and bestowal, and to begin to correct our inner nature, our programming, the reason why we do things, so that it becomes like the thought behind the spiritual qualities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you believe that man was provided with this as an inherent gift from the Creator, the ability to comprehend this. It must be an inbuilt to the soul qualities, or what I would call soul qualities, so that mankind, as he or she grows through lifetimes or experiences on this earth plane, can grow into an understanding and be able to eventually find the way back to, or the source of, the Creator, or move into higher dimensions. Is that correct? I may be putting it in awkward language.
No, it's quite clear what you're saying. Actually, we don't have within us that property whatsoever. We do. What happens, though, is that we develop through a process of desire. The driving force, the engine of all motion and all development in reality is only the development of desire. So you can look at a person. A person will continue to sort of reincarnate or experience things in terms of physicality as long as they are pursuing desires that are really egoistically based. For instance, a person will start their life, and civilization is like this too. We started out as a collective soul, as generations in reincarnating, first of all, being concerned only about the most basic kinds of egoistic desires, just for food and procreation and so on, and lived, you know, many lifetimes of civilization. And, you know, if you look at yourself, the early part of your own life, that's also what you cared about, you know. You have to have those basic things. And then what happens is that what we're really sensing, actually, is we're only sensing the quality of the Creator, but that's all that we can understand about it. We dress it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't feel anything that we don't want, and we also can't feel anything that we're not similar to. So what happens is we become disappointed by the fact that I was going out for fulfillment here, but really what I got was I'm emptier. I have like a bigger need. So the next kind of desire that a person wants is wealth. And you can see that civilization also worked that way. There was like expansions of trade and so on, and a person also goes through this in their life too. They find this empty, and they're still pursuing something. What is it that I want? Well, what they really want is the only thing that exists, which is that this upper force, the Creator, this unconditional love. They find wealth empty, and then they go through power. And then finally they come to a desire for knowledge. And knowledge is the kind of barrier between this world and the upper world.
Go ahead.
People think that, science or religion, art, psychology, these kinds of things, we believe that accumulating this will actually satisfy us. And everybody goes through this progression, but eventually anybody who looks seriously into knowledge of any sort also finds that completely empty. And it's at that point in which the upper force now has a place to work in a person. This is where, through after a while, how the natural force of development now places a desire inside of a person for something that does not exist in egoism. And at this point, after many incarnations, a person has the opportunity to begin working against their nature so that they can establish a kind of equivalence of form with the higher reality and then begin to perceive it. But this is not in the form of knowledge at all. This isn't really, spirituality has to do only with pure being states, pure feeling states. It has to do with intention and the degree of pure bestowal that a person can achieve against their egoism. And the latter, the way that we descended from this upper world, how it was all hidden from us, It was hidden by the increase of this will to receive until it completely darkened out any perception of our actual whole state. So now a person, through this force of development, through developing through many different kinds of desires, has a driving force in order to be able to leave this constricted space that we live in, this world of suffering, this constant emptiness, lack, isolation. All of these things that a world of suffering, which is really the pretty much the definition of the physical world, and can now really follow this longing that they have to be able to reach a state of love that will eventually become absolutely equivalent to the thought and the love of the Creator, and that will change their reality entirely. What they feel, what they see, as concrete and as tangible as what we feel about anything, this will all change, and it will change from a world of constriction and suffering into a world of complete interconnection, love, and service.
So you don't think that human beings are born with this quality of love?
Absolutely not. They are born with a quality of selfishness and hate, but it's part of a process. The Creator purposely hid this quality from us so that we would have to work within this gap where we don't perceive, which is called free will. Our free will only is a matter of ignorance, the fact that we don't perceive. He did this on purpose so that we could attain equivalence. If we already had it, if there was nothing for us to do except to just kind of grow and be lifted from being little egoists, we would be lifted to a level of enormous, monstrous egoists. It's part of a process so that by our own effort, we can achieve unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
That is, that there will be no reason why we love. It will only be that that is purely what we feel towards the Creator, towards all of humanity, towards all of reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's waiting for us, but it will only happen when we actually desire only that. Not to use the upper force to make ourselves wealthy, not to make ourselves well-known or any of those things that the ego wants to do, but
mm-hmm.
only in order to enter it unconditionally for others.
Now, we're talking about souls that are created and they first appeared on this earth. Is that correct? Now, we did discuss this briefly, you and I, mm-hmm. that you do believe in reincarnation.
Well, it's a fact.
Yeah. Okay, well, for me it is too, but for many it's a belief system rather than an unknown fact, or it's a thought or a concept, especially in Western theosophy. At any rate, so you don't believe any soul coming into the earth may come in having gone through this growth cycle or come in out of compassion and love to teach.
Well,
like you would have a great soul like Melchizedek, or say the Buddha, or a Christ, where they came to teach.
Well, yes, I do. First of all, I've got to say that nothing in Kabbalah is speculation. Nothing in it is abstracted. Everything in it is tangibly testable and knowable.
Uh-huh.
So the process of reincarnation and what happens to people is known, it's revealed, and it can be known the same way that you and I know that we're speaking to each other through a telephone line. But yes, it is there is such a thing as those who come into the world that way, but
mm-hmm.
only after they have completed the entire correction of every aspect of their egoism. They
mm-hmm.
They don't need to reincarnate, but they
right.
they do reincarnate in order to bring up the other aspects. Now,
mm-hmm.
we are not individuals. We perceive ourselves as individuals,
exactly.
but we are one being.
Yes, I agree.
And
absolutely.
The interconnection between us is that's what's concealed from us.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, you can say, oh, there are individual great souls and so on, but actually there are no individuals at all. And
no, we're all part of one.
There is no possibility to enter spirituality as an individual. The only way, the reason that we're feeling why Kabbalah is sort of coming in the way that it is in people's desire and interest is that we've reached a point in our development where we will collectively, as an entire, as the collective soul, enter into spirituality. And that's really the only way that we can. And that's why we see this tremendous globalization going on, this complete interconnectedness that we see, even on the physical sort of prosthesis level, where we see it on the internet, and we see that global trade, and it's impossible to make one step over here without causing a problem over
here. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, as the left hand is now knowing what the right hand is doing, even if it doesn't want to.
Yes. And we have to learn how to live there.
Yeah, live without the secrecy, which is very hard for any number of agencies that I can think of. That's a very interesting concept. Now, give us a little bit more about the history and where it comes from, because I'm sure people have heard the Kabbalah. Is it strictly handed down from the Jewish faith? Even the gentleman, by the way, who handled the phone and got you on the phone for the show, said he was talking to someone who asked if he was a Jewish Kabbalist, and he said, why? He said, well, you look like one. I said, what the heck does that mean?
Well,
I mean, you don't go around looking a little different than anybody else, you know what I mean?
Well, a lot of people think they can pick out Jews, but, you know, there you go. So, its origin is predates religion. Religion is a phenomenon that that came several thousand years after Kabbalah, but there is a connection there. But let me go back to the place where we can sort of clearly say that it evolved in ancient Babylon, you know, Mesopotamia, in the fertile triangle there. Humanity in general was very connected to the forces of nature. We had very, very small egoism.
Yeah.
It didn't take much for a person to be able to sense what was really behind what seemed to appear to them in their physicality. They were naturally connected to family and to the rest of humanity in a kind of in a very well sort of organized and connected way.
Would say it was probably due to the fact that there was not much chance of language at that time when the people were first came on this earth, and that I would guess, were I to guess, that they spoke through the language of mental telepathy, where many things were open and it was very much harder to obfuscate things through words, because it was more of a natural, I would assume, coming together of the mind. Go ahead.
Yes, because there is a sensation. There is actual, let's say, information or content within the connection that we have with each other.
Right.
That, of course, that kind of ability to sense other people is really an aspect of corporality. It's not spirituality, but it is a high degree of sensitivity, extremely subtle sensitivity, in terms of our experience in corporality. But so they were connected to the upper forces in a much more clear way. But suddenly something really changed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there was, and this is all part of the whole plan of creation, and the very plan of creation is this. So we can, I'll start with this, so we can sort of understand where it came from, where it's going. The thought of creation is to create a creature and to fill the creature with unbounded delight.
Okay.
First, create a creature, and then to develop this creature until it reaches its source of unbounded delight, and you can deal with that.
Okay.
So as part of this process of evolution based on spiritual evolution, based on the expansion of the opposite property, all of a sudden, in ancient Babylon, Mesopotamia, there was an eruption of egoism that really, on a quantitatively, enormously larger than it was prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And humanity started to develop along the lines. This is about the Tower of Babel.
Right. I remember it. I recall it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they started to develop against nature. They,
right.
Towards separation, towards intellect as opposed to actual connection. And all of civilization has followed that from that time on. At the same time that that happened, there was an individual named Abram, who lived at that time, who was a priest. He was he made idols and so on with his father. But he penetrated, actually, the method, the way of receiving these into the will to receive that would actually allow him to transform or correct this expanding egoism so that it would be able eventually to hold all of the light in it. There was a way of transforming egoism into its opposite. And so he wrote what's really the first second written book on Kabbalah, and it's called The Book of Formation or Creation, Sefer Yetzirah. So, and he's also considered to be now the father of the three Western religions, and by the way, he is also the father of the Eastern religions. But he gave methods, he taught people how to understand, perceive, and enter the higher reality, and to develop not by egoism, but by building a similarity of form with bestowal. Now, many thousands of years later, his group of students developed into a nation. That is, that they had a kind of a loving bond with each other, and it was a very large number of them, say 600,000, we use that term, but it was more, it was millions. And they built what we now think of as ancient Israel. And they built a temple which really was a connection, a loving connection that existed unlike any place else in the world and any other people, because all of civilization was going in the other direction. So he started to develop this for the time at which all the rest of the world would be ready and needed to use this. So at the destruction of the temple, when this connection, this loving connection with each other...
And we're talking about which temple? The temple in Jerusalem?
The temple in Jerusalem, which really represents... It really only means that there was an actual tangible connection with the upper force that all people in that group could feel. When it was destroyed, it was destroyed purposely so that this knowledge could spread throughout the world. It was only then, when humanity dropped from that connection to the upper force, that religions, beliefs, projections, philosophies replaced the actual connection, because it was impossible for humanity to understand what was really written in those books. They could not understand it because their properties were dissimilar to it. And that's when it became hidden. It was because we didn't need it, couldn't understand it. And so we got Judaism, and then we got Christianity, and then we got Islam, and so on, which are sort of ways that man makes up to make up this gap in their perception, and they're basically not really connected to the upper world. But the teachers, the lineage of these teachers, existed. Many of them existed within the context of what people call Judaism, but they really weren't functioning as religious Jews. They were functioning still as Kabbalists. They were just living in that milieu. So it's not really a religion.
Okay. And this is carried down in what books? What we know as the Old Testament and the New Testament, the Talmud, the writings, were they preserved through time, or were they passed down orally?
There, some were preserved, some were written and immediately disappeared. The ones that we know best, that the world knows best, is the Torah, the five books of Moses, which is a completely Kabbalistic book. But this generation cannot understand anything that's written in that book, because nothing in that book is referring to anything in the physical world. It's not talking about, it's not the rules of being a nice person, it's got nothing to do with that. It's not telling us how to live our lives here. It actually describes the soul's descent from its source and the method by which we can rise up through those same steps that we descended. That is a major book. the book of Zohar is actually the Kabbalistic book intended for this generation.
Mm-hmm.
There are many books, but not only two books really apply to the souls of this generation, and that is the Zohar and the work of the Ari, the holy Ari, and the works of Bala Salam, who was a great Kabbalist of the 20th century, who distilled all of that and put it into a scientific sort of framework that any person can enter the first rung on of the spiritual ladder.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of books, and there are a lot of books, over the centuries, but they don't all give a complete picture, nor are they written for people who are not in spirituality. Those books are written in a language that really hides
mm-hmm.
what they're talking about. It's
mm-hmm.
only the work of Bala Salam, Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag, that opens it up and allows a person to really understand this opposite world of spirituality, to begin to sense it and to begin to be able to become like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you become involved in this?
I was kidnapped by aliens.
You what?
No, I'm just kidding.
I said, excuse me? Okay, we'll go there next. there's a lot of information that's imparted from not from our spheres here, but in other manners of speech. Sometimes call it inspiration. I call it sometimes a 2x4 applied firmly over my head
until
I get it.
That's exactly how we learn, actually. How I came to it was, I actually have wanted to, ever since I was a young guy,
mm-hmm.
I have been searching for and trying to study, searching for a real Kabbalist teacher and attempting to study in whatever form I could. I just was always drawn to it. Say from the time I was about 20, and I searched for more than 30 years,
mm.
and studied with several teachers, none of whom could open it up. You know, there are a lot of books out there that were written in the 70s and 80s, and even in the early part of the 20th century, and they are all nonsense. None of them have anything to do with authentic Kabbalah.
Okay.
But of course, like everybody else who searches for these things, I read them, I sought out the people who wrote them, and so on, and.
Yeah.
And eventually, after really wanting it badly enough,
yes.
I encountered the what I consider to be the only Kabbalist in the authentic tradition who is teaching today, and who is doing it in order to reveal it to all of humanity, which is really what is necessary now. Because at this point, the only way that we are really going to be able to live in this globalized new level of life that we're going to enter into is
right.
to be able to live in a place where we understand that there must be this desire within us
yes.
to act like the laws of nature. And the general law of the universe is really, really simple. But it's so different from us that we need the help. We need instruction as to how to actually do it. Basically, it is to love your friend as yourself.
To love your neighbor as yourself.
That's right, to love your neighbor as yourself. But not to say it, but to be able to actually, to learn a methodology that actually lets each of us feel that without a single atom of difference from that. That they're not a little piece of it for me,
yeah.
and then most of it for you guys. It has to be precisely the way that the upper, that the law of the universe actually functions. We can become equal to that and have an unconditional connection with each other, so that all of these difficulties that we have, where we're trying to hold on to pieces of things, we're trying to say my religion is right, and we have a global war based
mm-hmm.
on this, where we have an inability to share resources because every part of the world is trying to hold back from entering, getting past this crisis of realizing that there is no private property because we are not individuals. The law of nature works like this. A person gets absolutely everything that they
mm-hmm.
need, and they give everything that they have in order to fulfill the whole, like a cell in a body.
Mm-hmm.
And we live as the whole body, and we have to be able to live like that because we're being push to it.
Mm-hmm.
What we see as ecological crisis
mm-hmm.
and what we see as intractable wars and
mm-hmm.
is only because we are behind in our development. We are hanging on to our egoism
mm-hmm.
where our freedom, our delight, and our fulfillment can only come from actually learning how to love our neighbor as ourselves in the same way that we would love a child or a beloved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's understood. Now, that is a major theme in most so-called religions today.
That's correct, but there is no religion that teaches you how to do that.
How so? Explain to me.
How do you do it?
By, of course, according to Moses, following the Ten Commandments, in Christianity, it is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and thy neighbor as thyself, by simply opening up your heart and loving with that instrument of your heart, and consider others before yourself. This is not the doormat concept, but loving respect. It is a code that I have lived with, been a part of all of my life.
I agree. Me too. But the thing is that it is impossible to keep the Ten Commandments. There is no way that we can do anything externally. We cannot keep these laws in terms of our mind, or just by doing things with our hands and feet, or by thinking that we're giving. This is speaking about the only way to keep the law, actually, is to become equivalent with that law.
Well, to become one with the law.
Yes. So, but becoming one with the law
yes.
must be something that you know for an absolute certainty. So it's because it's the same. It's tangible. It's real. It's measurable. And there is a method.
Mm-hmm.
To doing it. So that's the difference between we all know that that's really where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at what our real life situation is, the degree of suffering that we actually have,
mm-hmm.
Not what we tell ourselves, not what we project or abstract, not what we say is the most important thing, but
mm-hmm.
what is it that we actually feel? That's the only thing that is the truth. That's where we can say, that's the world I live in.
Mm-hmm.
To what degree do I feel that everything actually is loving? Or do I really not feel it because I am suffering or I don't like this or I have a response? You see what I'm saying? There is a way to actually enter this so that a
mm-hmm.
person feels that complete delight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is correct about all those religions, and that it points to it. But only this science, this sort of the science of the prophets, the science of the Kabbalist is... Kabbalah means reception. It means how to receive correctly. That is, a
mm-hmm.
way in which we can actually receive, because that's our very nature. We are nothing but the will to receive. But if we can receive, and in a way in which our reception becomes transformed and becomes bestowal,
mm-hmm.
then we can feel exactly the same thing as the Creator feels. Then all of these problems that we see in the world, they will become changed because our reality will change, because our inner nature changed. Not that we have to tell ourselves to do it, but that we are that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we become one with what we think, and it's also what I call reprogramming one's own past history, because we program ourselves daily with negative thoughts. And when you stop and think about it, it's rather appalling.
The Creator programs us that way. That is our nature, to constantly think about ourselves, and that's why we suffer. And the degree to which we are different, and the Creator does this to us so that we will make an independent action here,
mm-hmm.
We actually only can grow according to what we desire. Our thoughts have no control over anything. Desires emerge within us, they're given to us by the Creator, and then this whole operating system arises out of that, and it just amplifies it. If we learn to desire the right thing, that's how it changes, and that's what the methodology is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's to have one overriding desire, greater than all of our little egoistic desires that we must have for our existence.
Yeah.
But we have to develop one desire only for the Creator, and once that happens, then there is a vessel in which the Creator, the light, and this kind of correction and ability to love your neighbor as yourself can enter there.
Mm-hmm. I see. And do you get it from lifetimes, is that correct?
It's
going through various lifetimes.
Oh, yes, we start
growing step by step, in other words.
Yes, everybody does that step by step by step until the point in the heart, this actual desire for the Creator appears. Then it's possible for a person to reach the entire correction of all of reality within one lifetime. And that's the goal.
Well, it's not within one lifetime if it's taken over of time. It might be come to a culmination where it would be a final lifetime, so to speak, on this earth plane.
Yes.
What about other dimensions? Do you believe that our souls do move into other dimensions as well once it conquers this one through a desire and all that?
Yes, but we have to understand what a dimension is, because generally what we think of as other dimensions, higher dimensions, is just a kind of a quantitative difference. Mm-hmm. Based on what we already perceive according to our egoism. That is, we imagine it only according to what we've experienced so far in our development. But dimensions are qualitatively different.
Yes. We have a call here.
Okay.
Welcome.
Hi.
Who are we speaking with?
Sandy.
All right. Welcome. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Tony had said earlier something about that Abram was the father, also the father of Eastern religions, and I was wondering if he could elaborate on that. I can see how it connects with, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, the Islam religion, but I'm not sure how it connects with the, the Eastern religions. They seem, because it seems totally different.
Like Hinduism and
Buddhism and Shintoism.
Shintoism and all that. Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Thanks for your question.
Yeah.
First, let me give you a quick definition of what the methodology of Kabbalah is and what Abraham taught. Basically, it is the expansion of our egoistic qualities and the subsequent correction, expansion of egoism and its transformation into altruism. Unless this egoistic vessel grows to an enormous opposite proportion, all of reality cannot be exposed, because everything is exposed by its opposites. Now, this is the method of the basic sort of outline of what Kabbalah is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the Bible calls the sons of the concubines. Remember, the Bible's not talking about anything physical, but let's deal with it that way.
Mm-hmm.
He taught his sons, Isaac, Jacob, and so on, this method directly. But he taught everybody, and the light can only teach according to the root of the soul and the nature of a person's desire or their vessel. The name Abraham is exactly the same word with the letters transposed as Brahman, if you
right.
look at it.
That's correct.
And what happened there is he sent his sons, or there were members of his students, who went to the East and brought the method in the form that it could be, that was suitable for the souls at, living there at that time, because everybody's under development. The fulfillment of everything didn't happen then. It's going to happen with us. What he taught, what his sons taught there was, and how they understood it, was that the will to receive is bad. In other words, that it is, in a sense, what blocks us from perception of the upper world, and that it should be, and that egoism should be stilled. That's the approach that they took, because it had to do only with the nature of the desire that they had. It was based on the overcoming, rather than the overcoming and transformation of egoism, it was based on stopping it down to want less and less and less and less.
Right.
And that's what you find in yoga. What you find in Eastern meditation.
Right. So then it's kind of the opposite of, like, as what most, like I said, Judaism, Christianity, which is that most people in America, more. So can I take it from there and say that the Americans generally are more, would be, better suited to study Kabbalah because they're so greedy anyhow.
That's an interesting point. You know, it depends on how satisfied a person seems to be with all this will to receive. There is a potential, but unless a person understands, can already feel that there is an emptiness to this, can understand that the things that they're seeing around them in the world are really being caused by them and what it is that they want, unless they're woken up by this, you see, there's a sort of two hands of what you could call providence that happen. There is either a push from behind by which we develop and come to want the right things through a kind of path of pain and suffering. And there's another one that is the path of light and transformation, which sort of beckons us, where we begin to want it and follow it, and actually that we speed up, we accelerate our growth by having the desire and wanting it more than anything else. In America, we're right on the borderline between being pushed from behind and wanting this. These crises will have people ask what the meaning of their life really is.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I suffering, and how can I really change it? We're not quite there yet.
Right.
It's soon, but we're not there yet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for calling in.
Sure. Okay.
Tony, I'm going to give you a few minutes to give contact information or others for our listeners who would like to contact your organization and learn more about the Kabbalah and mankind.
Okay. Let me tell you what the organization is. It's the Ashlag Research Institute and the Kabbalistic group of B'nai Baruch. And this is a nonprofit organization whose purpose is to make available to anybody who needs it authentic Kabbalah coming from the authentic chain of Kabbalistic teachers that have been taught over thousands of years in an unbroken chain. And all of our material, our teaching, our books, everything are available for free on our website. You can also get them in bookstores and so on. There were over 30 books that have been published by our Rav and our organization, Rav being our teacher, our spiritual guide, Kabbalist. The most recent book is The Complete Idiot's Guide to Kabbalah, which is actually a great starting point for people. It's just come out on Penguin Books, and it's in Borders and in all of the Penguin bookstores.
Okay. Is that what your sentence? Were you going to give before we answer this?
I'd like to give you a couple more things.
Go ahead. Just very quickly, and then we'll get to the listener.
If you want to study, you can reach our learning center at arionline.info, arionline.info. Or you can go to kabbalah.info. It's a huge site with a tremendous amount of resources there, films, books, audio, all kinds of things related to authentic Kabbalah.
Okay, excellent. All right, listener, welcome.
Hello.
Yes, and you are, sir?
I'm David.
David, welcome to the Higher Dimension. How may we help you this evening?
Well, I have a question for Tony.
Yes.
And it has to do with the Creator, when He created us, you know, we strive for equivalence of equivalence with the Creator. I mean, does that make us gods who have forgotten who we are, or, I mean, a part of God?
Hi, David.
I'm not sure if I'm getting through what I'm trying to say.
I understand what you're saying. Kabbalah does not look at anything in terms of its essence. We don't look at things from the point of view of the Creator. You know, there's this phrase that from the Bible that says, by your act shall we know you. In other words, we can understand the interaction between the Creator and us, but we can't know anything by its essence. But the Kabbalists have revealed, those who have reached the final, you know, states, the highest states, they tell us that there is only two things in creation, the Creator and the creature. That is, there is one quality, but it has two sides to it. It has the quality of bestowal and the quality of reception. The Creator created us this way so that we could attain equivalence of form. But when we attain this, we have the same inner qualities as the Creator. It's not that He eradicates us and we disappear. It's that within us we attain His, what He can do, we can do. What He knows, we know. What He feels, we feel. And there is a transparency of quality between the creature and the Creator. But
wow.
But fulfillment remains. It's not like things disappear. It's that they become completely fulfilled.
Ah, that puts a whole new light on what I was thinking. It makes it better, actually.
See, what it is when you say nobody can do the will of God, you must become the will of God, so that it happens that a person eventually comes to feel and want precisely what the Creator wants for
exactly.
us.
Exactly. Yes, I agree with that.
Wow.
And this is and any person who learns the methodology can actually achieve this, can achieve real pleasure and real eternal fulfillment, not the kind that goes out every time you get a little satisfaction in your desire goes away. This is a desire that expands eternally and is filled eternally.
Wow. I don't know what to say. That's a lot.
Good.
Well, I hope that you find it.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you so much for calling. Again, you are listening to Tony Kosniak on the Higher Dimensions. I'm Phyllis Pricer. We will be back next week. You can always write in with your comments to BBS Radio, or you can send me an email at psychicworlds4@aol.com. I'm always glad to hear from our listeners. I always say readers. I don't know why. I guess because we're talking about reading. And, I always look forward to hearing from you, responding to you, and finding out who else you would like to refer and have on the show. We only have a few more minutes, but I wanted to let you know, Tony, how grateful I am that you were able to come on such short notice. And I think my listeners are really enjoying this lesson and on a subject that we've heard about but don't know a whole heck of a lot about because it's not been out there in our face, so to speak.
Yes, and I really appreciate you graciously inviting me to be able to share this with people, because that's the whole purpose of the work that I do is to make it available for people. So if somebody out there has what we call a point in the heart, feels that they want to correct these things, to transform these things within themselves,
mm-hmm.
then they know where to look.
Yes, well, that's what we're here for, to help share and to bring knowledge. That's part of what this show is about, is to bring to people's awareness the many ways. My company is called Multiple Pathways. I believe there are many ways to God and many forms of knowledge, but they all bring us back to the main source by whatever methods we do, and it's a very gracious, fascinating way to that there no one gets lost is what I'm trying to say.
That's right.
There's a way for everyone, and we eventually arrive at the same point, even if we start out our journey on a different road. But this has been a wonderful experience. I have thought about the Kabbalah from time to time. I had not known much about it. I really think it's interesting. I will be going to the website and looking more into it because it makes good sense to me. And I think we're all on a spiritual journey, and I am always eager to learn more and expand more my knowledge so that I can and then turn around and share with others so that we grow along. You know, it's Edgar Casey said, oops, sorry about that. Ambulance going by. At any rate, Edgar Casey said that that which we learn and know and do not share is accounted sin to us. If we know and have information that can help and guide others, we should do it. It's our responsibility to each other. It's our duty to help others. and to share the knowledge. But if we don't live it and we don't share it, then we're being selfish and hoarding it, which is apparently what you're not supposed to do.
Yes, it causes us a lot of pain when we do that. And everybody else, too.
Yes, yes. Well, sometimes I think I like to share too much, and people would wish I'd share a little less. There's a little bit of too much giving here. but is there anything else before we end, and we only have a couple more minutes, that you would like to say to sort of wrap it up or sum it up? Big question, I know.
Well, I would say that if a person feels that, if this resonates with a person and they understand that there is something that they want that is not in this world, and they understand that it's not going to be about using upper forces to get a soulmate or to bless things, or to, if they understand that everything
mm-hmm.
comes from above, and
yes.
the only way that we can fix anything is to rise to the causative level, that we cannot fix these situations on the physical level and in our egoism. Nothing
right.
that we do here will do anything to help the world. It doesn't matter what the action is. Only on the level, the causative level, the creative level, which is pure intention,
mm-hmm.
can anything be repaired. And that's, if a person feels that, then they should look into even the simplest, maybe the, you know, the complete idiots. I hate that name, but it's beautiful.
Idiot's guy, too.
Kabbalah, yeah.
Yeah, well.
Look into it, and there's enough of the methodology there that you'll be able to get a toehold on it.
Wonderful. You know, I may be one who looks into it because, as I said, I am always seeking, always questing, because each time the door opens, I get more and more inspired, and I'm having a great and wonderful time.
Yeah, you've got a great job.
Don't I, though?
Yeah.
I love it. All I have to do is open my mouth. Okay, that is our signal that our time has come. Thank you all. God bless you and good night. And Tony, perhaps we'll speak again. And thank you again for your gracious time with us.
Thanks. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.